your call back to order the public, the Montgomery County Hospital District and the Montgomery County Public Health District start meeting. Thank you guys for joining us. Wanted to cover updates from last week. The first thing I wanted to do is I wanted to read a brief note that I had written because I've been asked over and over why is it so difficult to get free COVID-19 testing in Montgomery County. So bear with me and I'll read my note. On the week of March 8th, Montgomery County Public Health District entered a STAR, S-T-A-R request, which is the process required to order emergency supplies from the state of Texas. We ordered 1,000 COVID-19 test kits. After some delay, the Public Health District received 6 COVID-19 test kits. So we got 6, we ordered 1,000. Next, the major hospital systems in the greater Houston area decided they could combine their resources and set up 3 testing sites in Houston and the surrounding county. Unfortunately, they too never received enough test kit resources to be able to provide 3 test sites in areas outside the greater Houston area. CENTRAC, the Greater Southeast Trauma and Emergency Coordinating Agency, was finally able to get some test kit resources from the state of Texas stockpile and along with larger Houston area hospital systems, set up a free testing center located at Butler Stadium in Southwest Houston. Please note that this is the primary free testing area for all interested residents of Southeast Texas, which includes Montgomery County. You can go to this site if you wish to be tested for free. Montgomery County Public Health District has reached out to all the major health care suppliers since March 16th, and it's been told that all the test kits that we ordered are on back order. To date, Montgomery County Public Health District has received none of the test kits that we've ordered. Now the kits resourced from China are being purchased at a price of from $25 to $60 per kit. Individual health care agencies are charging for COVID-19 screening, and they must cover the cost of this test, the cost of the laboratory procedure that determines the screen of the patient. And because the stockpile of tests from the state is in a very short supply, the testing and screening for COVID-19 is expensive. There are very few testing sites in Montgomery County. There are some who charge, and for anyone who wants to get information about a site offering tests, whether free or for some cost, they can call our hotline number to the public health number. Free screening and testing sites for greater Houston area is in Houston at the Butler Stadium. Melissa, would you talk for just a minute about some of the difficulties we've had trying to get our test kits and why that's the case?
The main reason we had difficulties in getting our test kit is because this is not a service we provide outside of this event. So the Public Health District or MCHG order tests for viral testing kits. So we're not on any of the people's radar for doing these tests any other time. So people that have been buying these for years and use those in their physician's office, their hospitals, their clinics, are first on the list to receive those tests because they already purchased those viral media swab tests. And so that is why we are at the back end of that list, because this is not a service we provide. We provide TB testing and treatment, STD testing and treatment, childhood immunizations at our public health clinic. And our EMS partners do not test for flu on the truck.
And we don't do testing through our health care program that takes care of the indigent patients of the county. We basically pay for services that are provided by hospitals and health care providers.
We provide them with flu shots and diabetic testing kits, but other than that, those are the only type of testing kits we purchase on a routine basis.
Okay, I spoke briefly about the call center. The call center has been, a very well-managed, well-received program. It was done through the Public Health Clinic, and EMS has taken over the management of it as of late. So we have 10 callers that are available 7 days a week or 12 hours a day. Originally, the call center was staffed primarily. primarily by EMS medics, paramedics, and some nursing students. Now we had the medics that we had in there. They were going through our new employee orientation program when this COVID-19 outbreak began. So we stopped our NEOP classes, orientation classes, but we put them on the phones. They've been on the phones for the last several weeks. But we really needed to get them to the field, so they now have restarted their NEOP classes so that they can get on the trucks where we're going to need them. And replacing them have been some employees from the Montgomery County, from the county, who've been on furlough. So they're in our center. They're doing an excellent job, I'm told, filling calls, and they're under the management of some paramedic overseers.
One of the things that the call center does very well is daily they check on who in the county are performing tests, still have tests they can provide, and they're able to direct those callers to those sites that are open and performing tests. And again, if you're an insured member citizen and you go in for a test, they're not charging you your copay. They're letting insurance pick up the cost of those tests. So for those, there's no out-of-pocket when they go to be tested. Lone Star is opening up their drive-through. They started today. You can go on their website and log in whether you're already a Lone Star member and patient, or if you're a new patient, fill out the paperwork and be assigned a time that you can go through and be tested. That's sliding scale. They take insurance with no copay, or if deemed by their standards, it could be another charge. But that would be a very rare patient. Heidi, if you're on and that's incorrect, please correct me.
Now hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So essentially we're taking all insurances at this moment. If someone's out of network, we'll just let them know that, you know, what the process is for that. But yes, we are offering our sliding fee, and then also the patients who have insurance. But a physician just needs to order the test, so our patients must be seen by a physician before the test.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
There are several testing centers in the county. Several different healthcare organizations have purchased tests from various suppliers and are charging you know, various amounts of money for those tests. We endorse testing in the community. We like to have people do as much testing as they feel comfortable with, and we endorse people who are charging for the test because having the test and providing the test is expensive. Lots of the tests will be covered by insurance, which should be a cost to you. But we want to have tests. We have a list of the testing centers that are open every day on a daily basis and which hours they're open. We can call our call center for that information.
And that number is 936-523-5040. And the access also via either the NCHD or the NCPHD website.
Next, I wanted to talk just a minute or two about modeling. You know, we've talked last time that we had our meeting, we were talking about the various models that we've been looking at. We continue to look at models. Our models have been a bit slower than what we had projected that they would be for looking at all the data that we have. We think that that's probably because we don't know all the positive tests that are in the county. All the positive tests are supposed to be reported to us, the public health district, but we're getting reports in a myriad of ways. There's not been a real organized testing process and evaluation process in the greater Southeast Texas area. So I think we probably are undershooting our positive cases by a considerable amount. Anyway, that being the case, our modeling is starting to increase. Patient volume is starting to increase. We're seeing that for today. We're still concerned that we're hoping that the information is correct and additional beds are going to be needed for the spread of Southeast Texas area. We're hoping that people will they keep predicting that our peak numbers are going to happen later and later and later. The latest data that I've seen is that the peak numbers should happen April 29th, about a week ago.
No, I mean, I would echo what Randy said. I mean, that it's kind of a moving target. And why is it moving? I think it's twofold. I think it's that we're behind the curve on testing a bit. And I think it's because we engaged in some social distancing and some of the policies that the judge has put out in our county and the governor. So I think that that's initially what's kind of flattened things out and moved it. I still hope it's not coming, but I think we do have a pretty big surge of patients coming.
We saw a big increase today. The new number today was from 266 to 308. And since that report, we've seen the number of more positive cases, which will be announced tomorrow at noon. We have 42 in the hospital, have six deaths, and 94 recovered. So that jump of 42 is the biggest jump we've seen so far.
He's the guy here who does most of our research. He also is still practicing in emergency room in Alpha County. So he sees from both sides of the equation what's going on in the government account.
Yeah, I think echoing what Lucilla just said, this thing, the high jump, I don't know if that will decline over the next week to 10 days. As testing has ramped up, I think we're going to see more positives. And I think that's part of the reason for the pushback. Another part of the reason is that realistically, when you go to Walgreens, I just came from the grocery store and CVS, and you have to stand 6 feet apart now. Those things help.
Yeah.
It's amazing as it is to go in and stand on those stickers and think about how we used to go to the grocery store 6 months ago. It's pretty remarkable. In the emergency department still, in Montgomery County and in Harris County, we're still relatively short on tests, from the emergency physician side. So the general practice right now in the Southeast Texas area is not universal testing. It's still testing the patients who are critically ill or who are going to be admitted to the hospital or who are healthcare workers or potential high-risk folks. So there are a large cohort of patients that come in that are younger and healthier with normal vital signs, well appearing, that do not get tested in the emergency departments right now. So that's another ding to the idea that we actually know the true number of infected patients. So that's where the social distancing and restrictions really come into play. So I think we're going to see the numbers continue to climb. I think we still have to be careful out of
support,
and it helps us have long-term PPE options going from a disposal down to a reusable can. And overall, staffing continues to be well. Morale is good on the EMS side. We're waiting. We're being patient, and we're trying to be safe, and that's where we're at.
Yeah, I'm very, very proud and excited. The chief and the docs have done a fantastic job, along with their team, of trying to make sure that we're providing the best medicine possible with the least amount of risk to the medics and the least amount of risk to employees, I'm sorry, to the patients and the family. And not to reiterate, but Dr. Dixon, would you like to talk just real briefly about some of the things in general that you've changed over the last 6 weeks, the short week, the market, the what we've seen?
Sure. These are practicing in much different times than we were 6 weeks ago, for sure. I think we are one of the most, if not the most progressive EMS services in this country, if not the world. And we perform at a very, very high level for our providers. One of the things that we've had to do, which has been a big, big change for us, but I'm happy to report, I've said it before, that I'm so proud of our healthcare system that I would put it against any other, that when you bring in a big change and say, here, guys, you did it this way today, but I want you to turn around, stop what you're doing, and do this over here, that this agency was able to do that, do it really well, effectively, and safely, pretty much overnight, which is unbelievable to me, having practiced medicine for over 20 years in multiple hospitals. And many of you have experience in the hospital world or in the healthcare world, how hard it is to get people to change behavior. Just some of those things are, as she said, PPE, right? We never approach people with breasts or fever like we do today. And it is drastically different. We're not used to putting up. I've very rarely donned PPE in my entire career, maybe less than 20 times. 30 times, my entire career, and now we're asking crews to do that 20 times a day. That's just one example. Another example is the airway algorithm. I'll let Dr. Patrick talk about how we change the airway algorithm, how we approach these patients. It's vastly different.
Yeah, so if you watch any news, and really, this has crept into the late press, any droplet exposure from the patient is how we get infected. So in this really prolonged disaster situation, one of our focuses here at this table has been how to keep our medics from becoming infected, how to keep them safe while still providing patient care. And when we have these patients that present, critically ill with respiratory illness, respiratory pneumonia, viral pneumonia, airway management from oxygen treatment to all the way to intubation and placement on the ventilator, that's all in the cards for us, in the field. And, 6 months ago, the idea of performing an intubation on a patient and potentially ending up with COVID wasn't a reality, wasn't a possibility. So we've had to really look at every single step from putting a nasal cannula oxygen on a patient, which is relatively mild, all the way to placing that patient on the ventilator, and looking at each individual motion, each individual action, each treatment, and trying to decide how can we do this in the safest manner, and does it need to be done at all? Is this providing benefits to the patient, or is it just exposing us to risk? And realistically, at multiple stops along that pathway, we've had to make changes in how we approach these patients to try to not expose them to the droplets, to the viral droplets. And, some of them have been quite significant relative to what we did 6 weeks ago, 6 months ago. And I just, again, echo what Dr. Dixon said. Our medics have listened. They've been engaged with our nightly meetings, on Zoom. And we've continued to try to message directly to the paramedics and provide them with information, multiple outlets from podcasts to email to hear
every single night to try to hammer this home and be available for questions. So that when they get these changes that seem really bizarre and really away a year, 179 degrees from normal, you know, why are we doing them? How do we expect them to do it? And, you know, what's the research background? What's the thought process? And then allow a two-way street for communication and to ask questions back to us. And really, it's probably been the most, I would say for me personally, the most encouraging, most positive, really, action or aspect of this whole long thing is the nightly calls and really getting one-on-one time with the medical crews, being able to tell them not just, hey, you have to change, but we want you to change to keep you safe, and here's why you have questions. And that's been very, I think, met with enthusiasm from the paramedics and also been kind of powerful and impactful for them. Back and forth for me as well.
Yeah, it's a motivator for the whole city. Well said. Thank you, Dr. Patrick.
Yeah, and I think it's worked so well because, you know, it's been a great communications tool to the medics to speed up making changes. And then as you try the changes in the field, you realize there's some things that happen in the field that may block what you originally wanted to do. It's been great to have immediate feedback from medics so that you can adjust, so that you can find a happy medium of what's safe and what provides the best care. And it's been very exciting to listen to these nightly Zoom meetings to see that process go back and forth, get to the perfect happy medium. They've done a tremendous job. They work every single day of the week, and the content is excellent. Also not lost on that is our safety team has been very, very diligent on making sure that our people are protected and followed up on each person who might be exposed. And our team has done a great job of taking care of potential exposed medics, testing them, and making sure that they're as comfortable as they can be until they get outside of the quarantine factor. It's been just a really exciting process to the public health programs and that. We're such a small organization that's done such a great job tracking and trending through the healthcare. I have some questions that was presented to me prior to this call, and I'll read them out. These questions are from Dr. Craig Follows. He had five questions. The first question was, has the county established a procedure to test for COVID-19 antibodies? And if so, how many have been tested today? And what has been the result? And if not, is there a timeline for testing? So I've asked Dr. Jackson if he'd like to take a shot at that.
Sure. So the antibody testing is also known as serology testing, as we talked about, I believe, in the last board update. Is where we look for the body's immune response to the virus. It's not looking for the virus itself, but rather the antibodies or the body's immune response to it. The short answer to the gentleman's question is no, those tests are not widely available. And it's very important to understand that this type of test has a specific timeline to where it's more accurate at in the second week after you're ill, and we say days say 10 to 20 of illness rather than 0 to 10. Well, I believe the PCR, the viral test that looks for the virus, is more accurate. So
swab,
correct. So it's this one, you take a little drop of blood, and we're simply looking for the antibodies. But it's important for the public to know the value of a test. And the limitations of a test. At the end of the day, I do think that sometimes the lay public thinks that the test is somewhat protective and we're going to glean all this information, when in fact it's an imprecise instrument that sometimes gives us an answer that we don't believe. I've seen in our service patients that I highly suspected of COVID, that acted like the COVID clinically, that had a negative PCR test. Okay, or had a negative antibody test. So no test is perfect. What's the accuracy of these tests? the antibody test, it's about two-thirds or 60%-ish. So, i.e., you do the test on a positive patient, it's going to give you the wrong answer and be negative early on in the first 10 days, about a third of the time, where you will have the disease, but you won't show it yet. In the latter part of that time frame of days 10 to 20, that accuracy goes up a bit. But it's still not a perfect test. There is still a perfect test out there. They all have their limitations. And so I think that wide-scale testing for that would be great if we had just unlimited tests and unlimited capacity to do that testing. But I would also say, don't take it for granted that if you have a negative test at one of these drive-thrus, you get this blood test, that everything is going to be fine and you're going to be fine, because that's just not the case. The tests are just one tool that we use in the clinical diagnosis.
And you can be negative today and become positive.
Yeah, and just for your information, the PCR swab, the commonly used test in the drive-thru, even under the best circumstances with a perfect test collection, it's probably only 80% sensitive. So if you tested 10 positive people, 8 would be positive and 2 would be negative. So if you had fever, chills, and cough, and you've got a negative swab, you probably still need to quarantine 14 days, in considering the limitations of the test.
And the reason why it's negative is because in order to swab properly, you've got to go way back into like the eyeball socket and dig around and hopefully find some goo there. If you miss the goo, then you don't test positive, even if you are positive. That's why I'm not a clinician.
Thank you, Dr. Jones. Yes, vaccine serology test will be part of the reopening of state health.
No, I'm typing the response, but I can answer it. So Governor Abbott mentioned that yesterday in his press conference, but the problem with that is sourcing the test, how to implement the test, and it's unknown whether that would be accomplished in time or if it will be part of the process to reopen the state. And Governor Abbott said this week he's working on getting a team together to what reopening would look like, but that's where they left it.
Second question. What is the appropriate amount of money related to the COVID-19 CARES Act that Montgomery County Health District will receive, and what, and specifically what for?
Yesterday, on the 13th, Montgomery County Hospital District received $336,078.34 for lost revenue due to COVID-19, with yet to be published reporting requirements on those funds. So that's what we received today.
And that'll be for patients that we take care of and have who are indigent for Medicare reimbursements. That's what it is. So they're basically forwarding that money, then we have to come back with the state's audit against the money that they're giving us. So the money that they've given us may be covering all the expenses. It may not be covering the expenses. We'll be accounting for the amount.
And they'll get that information to us at a later date. So we just got the money, but not what the reporting or the requirements for usage.
Can the community get PPE masks since there is a recommendation? I'm sorry, where can the community get PPE masks since there is a recommendation that it has to be worn public?
If you call the number that Ms. Urbina typed into the call center, we've gotten a pretty good stock of donations from the community. The community's done an amazing job sourcing cloth masks, homemade masks, local high school students. Any donation that we've received, we've taken to the Office of Emergency Management at Montgomery County, and our call center can put you in contact with them, and you can pick up those donated masks as well as some personal care kits that include toothpaste, deodorant, things like that. So, the number of masks left that we counted, it was about 250 masks.
Number four, what are the racial, ethnic breakdowns related to COVID-19 infected, recovered, death, etc. in the county today?
We have that data, although it has not been extracted. We have three epidemiologists in this county and our public health district. They're working very hard to keep up with the cases as they come on board. I'm happy to say that we were able to hire a data analyst, an epidemiology analyst today, but that person will not be up and running in that role until after we're able to, top up all these contact investigations and keep up with the volume that's coming in with the limited staff we have. We have interviews for two additional epi positions tomorrow. There's three people interviewing, so if two of those are able to accept those roles, they'll be on board in about 2 weeks, which should free up some of the ability to start doing the analyst position.
So right now, all we're tracking is male, female, and age. Number five, is the county experiencing any racial public health disparities associated with the COVID-19 pandemic? We're not tracking at this point.
We're gathering the data. We're not digging into that data.
Because we're just overwhelmed with tracking and trending the cases that we have now. So that will be information that we'll have, as she had said, once we're over the pandemic and we're able to do follow-up work. And that's all the questions that I have. Does anyone have any other comments they'd like to make before we close out?
Sir.
Okay. The next scheduled teleconference will be Friday, April 17th at 2 o'clock. We are adjourned, and it is 2:32.
Thank you.
Thank you, too.